All right, so here we go, and I'll say it one more time. Turn with me, if you will, to the book of Deuteronomy, or Devarim, the words, chapter 7, and we're not starting at quite the beginning. We're starting this time at verse 12, where it says, put a couple of different ways, and Ekev, or it shall come to pass. Here's a consequence. Several ways to translate that. What's interesting about that word Ekev there is literally the root word means a heel, as in a heel of a foot. And the way I've heard that explained is that when you walk, you put your heel down first and your toe. And so Ekev is the thing that happens first, and then other things come to pass. So in a way, it kind of makes sense. I hearken back to Brad Scott talking about Hebrew being a very agro body and physical things you can see kind of an oriented language. And with that in mind, it's always interesting to look at the root words. But in any case, that's how this one begins. It will come to pass because, notice it's not an if in this case, it's literally a because, or because you obey, because you hear and obey, because you hearken to these ordinances, these, in this case, it's mishpatim, and keep and do them. We saw that theme over and over again last week. We're going to see it again this week. The word shamar, I saw this in one of the midrashim, appears, I've forgotten the number, but it's up in the many, many dozens of times in the book of Devarim. It is a really, really important and certainly very Hebraic concept to hear and to hearken, to listen and obey. All right, if you will hearken, or because you will hearken to all these mishpatim, keep and do them, then Yahuwah will keep with you the covenant and the mercy which he swore to your fathers. He will love you, he will bless you, he will multiply you, also bless the fruit of your body and of your land, your corn, your wine, your oil, the increase of your cattle and the young of your flock, all the things basically in the land that he swore unto your fathers to give you. And furthermore, the blessings are just beginning. Yahuwah will take away from you all sickness. He is, after all, Yahuwah Rapha, who heals all of our sicknesses. He will put none of the evil diseases of Egypt, that you know real well, upon you, but instead will lay those upon those that hate you. You'll consume the peoples that he will deliver unto you. Your eye will not pity him. And for crying out loud, this is another theme we're going to see a number of times this week, do not serve their gods. That'll be a snare to you. It was a snare to them then. It's been a snare throughout history. And you know what, folks? It is a snare in modern America with a K, too. If you say in your heart, though, these nations are more than I, how can I go out and dispossess them? Remember, this is the same argument that we heard before. Moshe knows it well. These are big dudes. They're really scary. What are we going to do? Don't be afraid of them. Remember well what Yahuwah did to Pharaoh and to all of Egypt and the great trials that you've seen with your own eyes, the signs, wonders, mighty hand, the outstretched arm, how it is that he brought you out of there. And the same thing he will do to all of the peoples of whom you are afraid. He'll send the hornet among them too till they're left, and those that are left will hide themselves and, in fact, then perish from before you. Don't be afraid of them, because Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is in your midst. He's great and awful, and he will cast out those nations before you little by little. There's another caution here, because you know what? If he did it too quickly, then the beasts of the field might increase upon you. It's important to occupy the land and to fill it, literally. Because Yahuwah will deliver them up before you and discomfit them with a great discomfiture till they are destroyed. He'll deliver kings in your hand, make their name perish, till no one will be able to stand against you, and you've destroyed them. Oh, and this too then bears repeating. This emphasis on idolatry shows up throughout this portion and indeed throughout Scripture, but especially here. The graven images of their so-called gods, Elohim, you are to burn with fire. And this struck me, and I want to emphasize this point. Last couple of verses of chapter 7. A lot of times when I talk to folks about, you know, what is different about a Hebraic roots understanding than traditional ex-Christianity, which of course has incorporated all of these various fake gods, thank you, Roman Catholic, so-called universal church, that the Creator warned us about and said, for crying out loud, don't! We've got Mithra's birthday and Ishtar sun god and all the eggs and bunnies and other pagan trappings. Here is one that really, really struck me. And I hope as I go through this, if you haven't ever looked at this verse, it'll strike you the same way too. This section that we're in, I refer to Deuteronomy chapter 4, chapter 7, chapter 12, and chapter 13 in particular. These are places where if you really want to talk to a person who's considering coming out of ex-Christianity and wondering why it is that we've all inherited these lies from our fathers, what kinds of things will we focus on? Take them to these places, including chapter 7 and right here, and especially this one. All right, starts this way. The graven images of their Elohim you burn with fire. He does not like these things. Period. Doesn't want anything to do with them. But this is the line that really caught my eye, right? You are not even to covet the silver or the gold that is on them or take it into you, because it's a snare. Don't fall for it. And these things are an abomination. Again, that's that Hebrew word, toebah. The strongest, most clear indication that gets translated as abomination in the English of just how much he hates these things. This is really scummy stuff. We are supposed to burn the images with fire and literally hate these abominations so much that we don't even salvage the silver or gold that's on them. Later we're going to be told, like right now, don't, for crying out loud, even bring one of these things into your house. Now listen to this. And you shall not bring an abomination into your house and be accursed like it. Think about that when people talk about their Xmas trees and their bunnies and eggs. I wish I was kidding. No, I don't. Because we don't kid about the things that he says are matters of life and death, blessing and cursing, and that he calls abomination. And this is one of those things. Don't get sucked in to having one of these things in your house. Don't even salvage the crap that's on them. And don't even bring any of them into your house at all. Why? Because you can be accursed like it. You're instead supposed to do what? Oh, say it's okay, it's cute, God knows my heart, he won't care. Bull. Or golden calf. That's more like it. You shall, and I'm reading, utterly detest it. You shall utterly abhor it, for it is a devoted thing, ki cherem. And that's a nasty word, devoted. What is it devoted to? It's literally devoted to something that I guess you could call adversarial to him, downright satanic. The point here really is the following. You look at these two verses, and you cannot deny that what the so-called Church Universal has done is toibah. It is an abomination to him to think that it's okay to do things that he says he hates, he detests, and it's so serious that you're supposed to burn this crap with fire, and for crying out loud, don't even bring it into your house, lest you be accursed like it. I got to conclude, this is really serious. I know I emphasize this because he does. But again, when people come and they say, hey, you know, you say he doesn't change. He's same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Okay. Well, then tell me what's different. Take him here. Let him see this. And let him see the rest of the things that are said over and over and over and over again. And, of course, if you go to Matthew chapter 5, he says, I'm not changing any of this. Not the tiniest little part. This is not a tiny part. This is not a yod or tittle. This is a really big deal. So let's understand that. And we ought to be able to give an account for the hope that's in us and a warning, too, when it's appropriate. And this is one of those places where it is, because people are going to be accursed like these things. All right, chapter 8 says all, oops, there's that word again, all of the commandment which I command you this day, you're to observe to do. What, not just the 10 parts that we like? Not just parts that that don't offend our sensibilities? What do you mean, all? Yeah, all. I guess you'd think it'd be an easy, pretty clear word to understand, but hey, we got a problem with that.
All depends on what the meaning of the word all is.
All of the things I command you to observe and to do, to shamar to, do them, so you might live and multiply and go and possess the land. The Yahuwah, well, you see, we're not in the land anymore. I guess that makes a pretty clear case, doesn't it? The reason is because they failed to do all. Matter of fact, they failed to do a lot of them. Moses, though, Moshe is talking to them prior to going in the land. He says, you are to remember all the way which Yahuwah, your Elohim, led you these 40 years in the wilderness. Now, this is an interesting word. I've seen some interesting commentary, some pretty good midrash on this one. That he might afflict you, to test you, to prove you, to know what was in your heart, and find out whether you're going to keep his commandments or do what the Roman Catholic Church and all of those protesting Catholics have done. Say to hell with it. We know better than you, God. We got the red phone. We know exactly what we want to do. We could care less what you said to do and to keep all and to detest and utterly abhor. No, we like these things. We'd rather have them than you. That's why people are in exile again today. Because he did. For 40 years test them. They passed. And for the ensuing, the better part of 3,000 years or so, most of the people of the book have failed to know whether we would keep his commandments or not. Now, the thing that is interesting to about this, I've seen some midrash that says, you know, you would think if Moses is giving them a pep talk, that he might not spend a lot of time talking about how it was that God is testing you and afflicting you and letting you understand what hunger and thirst are a little bit so that he can know what was in your heart. That seems kind of negative, some have said. He afflicted you. He suffered you to feel hunger. Fed you with manna, though. Things that your fathers didn't know about. So that he might help you to understand and to know that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Does that sound familiar? Interesting. You know that Yahushua was quoting. You see it in a couple places. Ironically, it's one of those places where in Matthew 4:4 and Luke 4:4, same verse gets quoted. Man does not live by bread alone, but by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Here's that same concept. Kol, everything. All of these commandments. He has a point. He is doing this for a reason. And I guess the thing that I feel like emphasizing at this point, we'll talk about it when we get to the news again this evening. I can't help but think, folks, that there's going to be some affliction coming. We're already seeing it. There's going to be some hunger coming. There's going to be some thirst coming. There's going to be some a necessity of understanding that we are to trust in him. And that we do not live by bread alone, but by the things that come from his word. And that understanding is key. And I tend to think that if we haven't cleansed our house from abominations, there's going to be an element of that involved too. Remember a couple other things. Remember your clothes? They didn't get old on you. Your foot didn't swell up. Even after 40 years out walking in the desert, you will know. Yada. Actually, it's ve-yadat in this case. Yeah. You will know. He says, consider. That's how King James-ish translations put it, in your heart. That so as a man chastens his son, so Yahuwah, your Elohim, does, because he loves you. Almost every time we pray about our families and so forth, this verse, and there's actually a couple others that say something very similar because it's a very good understanding. Those he loves, he chastens. He chastened them. He loved them. He tested them. He proved them to see whether or not they would keep his commandments or not. Fathers do that with their sons. And it's an indicator that he loves you enough to hold you to task. And you will keep the commandments of Yahuwah, your Elohim, to walk in his ways and to fear him. I've got a note in my margin here. John 14:15. I don't have to look that one up. I know what that says. If you love me, keep my commandments. If you love me, keep my commandments. For Yahuwah your Elohim brings you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, fountains and depths springing forth in valleys and hill, of wheat and barley, vines, fig trees, pomegranates, olive trees, and honey. A land where you'll eat bread without scarceness. You won't lack anything. Stones are like iron, and out of the hills you can dig brass. In other words, there's mineral wealth here too, it sounds like. You shall eat and be satisfied. That's exactly the opposite of some curses we've seen of late and actually tend to kind of ring true. of things that say you will eat and eat and eat. You'll be eating crap. It's not food, and you won't be satisfied. This is a lot better to be where it is he's going to lead them. And bless Yahuwah for the good land that he has given you. By the way, here's one of those places where a lot of the rabbinic thought takes the indication that we are to give thanks after the meal, not more like the Christian way, which is to give thanks before. Eat and be satisfied then. Bless Yahuwah for the good land that he's given us. And finally, here is a warning. Beware, lest you should forget Yahuwah Eloheka, and don't keep his commandments and his ordinances and statutes, which I command you today. Lest when you have eaten and you're satisfied and you've built some really nice houses and you dwell in them, you got herds and flocks and all your silver and gold is multiplied. Things are looking pretty good. You got your beer and your pizza, your Sunday football game. How much better can it get, right? And everything you have is multiplied. That your heart be lifted up and you forget Yahuwah Eloheka, who brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, out of bondage, led you through these wildernesses where all kinds of things, serpents, fiery serpents, scorpions, thirsty ground with no water. He brought you rock, and then out of that rock brought water, fed you in the wilderness with manna, things your fathers didn't know about, and all of this so that he might afflict you and prove you, and in the end, do you more good. Well, lest you say in your heart, it's my power and my might, the might of my hand that's gotten me all of this good stuff. And I have that one highlighted. I guess of the things that I think, along with bringing abominations into our house, are a really good way to bring curses, this has got to be close to the top of the list. Lest you say in my heart, my power and my might, the might of my hand have gotten me all of this wealth. And I'll admit, folks, there's times where I look around and I see, you know, all the things that you do on a weekend and lots of accomplishments. Okay, wanted to get this done. It's done. Looks good. I'm happy about that. Look at all this stuff. That's done. That's good. I'm happy about that. Yeah, I did a good job. Worked hard this weekend or worked hard over the last month and finished the major things. Be careful. Make sure we give thanks and know who it is that's really helping us to get all this stuff done. Remember, he says, that it's Yahuwah Eloheka, it's he that gives you the power to do these things, to get wealth, all of which so he might establish his covenant, the one he swore to your fathers. And it will be, here comes the warning part, that if you forget him, walk after other gods and serve them and worship them, I warn you, you will surely perish. And as the nations that Yahuwah makes perish before you, so will you, because you wouldn't hearken, you wouldn't shamar, you wouldn't listen and obey. So, chapter 9 says, "Hear, O Israel, Shema Israel." That appears a number of times. And we're working up to a place, I mentioned this as we were going through some of the standard prayers that we pray every Shabbat. We start with Deuteronomy 6, Shema Israel, Yahuwah Eloheinu, Yahuwah Echad. Yahuwah is Echad. And then there's a part that follows that. Well, we're working up to that. But throughout here, we see this reference to Shema Israel. Okay. Hear, O Israel. Hear, what are we supposed to hear? You are to pass over the Jordan this day. Go in and you're going to dispossess nations greater, mightier than yourself, all kinds of fortified cities, really scary stuff, sons of Anakim, who can stand before the sons of Anak? Know therefore this day that Yahuwah, he is the one who goes over before you as a devouring fire. He will destroy them, bring them down before you so that you can drive them out to make them perish quickly as he has told you he would do. So don't speak in your heart after he has thrust them out from before you and say, oh, isn't it cool? How righteous am I? Yeah, it's me that's done all this stuff. And for my righteousness sake, yeah, that's what it is. Yahuwah has brought me in to possess this land. The nations that you're dispossessing were pretty stinking wicked. No, it's not for your righteousness or the uprightness of your heart that you're going into this land, because the wickedness of those nations is what caused Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh to drive them out, so that he might, in fact, establish the word that he swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov. So, One more time, let's repeat this. Know, therefore, that it's not for your righteousness that Yahuwah gives you this good land to possess it. You know what? You're a pretty stiff-necked people. Remember, do not forget how it is that there's a polite word and a not-so-polite word. You torqued him off in the wilderness. From the very day you came out of Egypt till you got here, you have been rebellious against him. In Horeb, you torqued him off there too. You made him wroth, says the King James' version. And Yahuwah was pretty well angered with you to the point he was fixing to whack you. And then I went up out on the mountain to receive those tablets of stone. Remember the first covenant? Was up there 40 days and nights. Hey, I didn't drink any water or eat any manna. And Yahuwah delivered to me those two tablets of stone written with the very finger of Elohim. The words that he spoke to you out of the mountain that day. And at the end of those 40 days and nights, he gave me those two tablets, the covenant. Said, hey, better hurry on down, hustle, because the folks that you brought forth out of Egypt have already gone over the hill. They've turned quickly aside from the way that I commanded them. They've made themselves that molten image. I've seen this people, he said furthermore, and they are a stiff-necked lot. I'm all fixing to destroy them. Blot their name out from under heaven. And I'll just make a nation out of you, Moshe. So he says, well, I came, I turned, I went down from the mountain, and it burned with fire with the two tablets in my hands. Now this is an interesting turn of phrase too. Two tablets of the covenant in my two hands. Don't know what to make of that. I just think it's interesting. He had one in each hand, clearly. I looked, and man, you were out there sinning against Yahuwah. Now remember, a lot of the people who were old enough to do this are dead. But it's the royal you in this case, and certainly I guarantee you, every person that's listening to this speech, I have no doubt, has heard this story. So I took those two tablets and I broke them, smashed them to bits before your eyes. And as I fell down before Yahuwah, as at the first, again, 40 days and 40 nights, I went up, didn't eat bread or drink water because of the sin that you sinned, doing evil in the sight of Yahuwah to provoke him. For I was in dread of the anger and the hot displeasure that he was so torqued off at you in order to destroy you. But again, he listened to me this time as well. He was angry with Aaron, could have destroyed him. I prayed for Aaron too. And I took that thing that you made, that calf, and I burned it in the fire, beat it into pieces, grinding it very small, till it was literally as fine as dust. Remember this story? Cast the dust in the water out of the brook that descended from out of the mount at Taberah and at Massah and Kibroth Hataava. You, all of those places, you made him wroth. And furthermore, when he sent you from Kadesh Barnea, saying, go up and get that land that I've given you, still you rebelled against the commandment of Yahuwah. You didn't listen to him. You didn't believe him. And you certainly didn't hearken. Yep, you have been rebellious against Yahuwah from the day that I first knew you. So again, I fell down before Yahuwah, says Moshe, 40 days and 40 nights, because he said he was going to destroy you again. And I prayed, oh, Yahuwah Eloheka, destroy not your people and your inheritance that you have redeemed through your greatness, that you have brought forth out of Mitzrayim with a mighty hand. Remember your servants, Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov. And don't look at the stubborn, stiff-necked, right, stubbornness of this people, not to their wickedness nor to their sin, lest the land that you brought us out say that you weren't able to do that. These, he continued, are your people, your inheritance, and you brought them out by your great power and by your outstretched arm. All right, well, we know the end of the story. Yahuwah says, okay, get yourself two more tablets of stone, just like the first ones. Come on up again. Make yourself an ark of wood, and I will write on the tables the words that were on the first ones, the ones you broke, and you shall put them into the ark. So, says Moses, I made that ark out of acacia wood. I made two tablets of stone just like the first ones, went on up again, and he wrote on them just like he said he would. Then I came back down, put the tables in the ark, and there they are, just as he commanded me. And the children of Israel journeyed from Berit Bene Yaakan to Moserah, and that's, remember, where Aaron died. He was buried there. And now we got Eliezer, his son, in the priest's office in his place. From there we went to Gudgod, and then to Jotbah, land of brooks of water. And at that point, perhaps you recall this, Yahuwah separated the tribe of Levi. They became the ones who would bear the Ark of the Covenant, stand before him, and minister in his name. That's why, he reminds them, Levi doesn't have any portion or inheritance along with his brothers. Yahuwah is his inheritance, just as he was told. So, I stayed the mountain, just like the first time, 40 days, 40 nights, and this time he hearkened to me. He wouldn't destroy you. And he said, arise, go before the people, get them setting out, heading on, that they may go in and possess the land that I swore to give them. Now, verse 12. This is a really, really good one. There's a lot of that in this Torah portion. And now, Israel, what does Yahuwah Eloheka require of you? What's he require of you? But to fear Yahuwah Eloheka, to walk in kol all his ways, and to love him, and to serve Yahuwah Eloheka with all your heart and with all your soul. To keep for your good the commandments of Yahuwah, his statutes, which I command you this day. Behold, unto Yahuwah your El belongs the heavens and the heaven of heavens and the earth with all that there is in them. Remember, only Yahuwah had a delight in your fathers to love them. He chose their seed after them, and that means you above all peoples as it is this day. So circumcise the foreskin of your heart and quit being stiff-necked. Be no more stiff-necked. For Yahuwah is your God. He is the Elohim of Elohim. Lord of lords, great God, mighty, awful, who regards not persons. He doesn't take a bribe. Think about that. Does he need a bribe for crying out loud? Of course he doesn't. Oh God, if you'll just save me, I'll give you $30. I'll make it worth your while, whatever the case may be. And there's not a whole lot. He owns the heavens and the earth and all that's in them. It really is kind of hard to imagine him being considered of a bribe. However, he is a rewarder of action and of covenant and of obedience. He execute justice, it says, for the fatherless and the widow. He loves the stranger, gives him food and clothing. So you too love the stranger. For you, in fact, he reminds them, not for the first time, were strangers in Mitzrayim. So therefore you shall fear Yahuwah Eloheka. Him you shall serve. To him you shall cleave, and by his name, even, you'll swear. He is your glory. He is your Elohim. That's done for you great and tremendous things. You have seen them with your own eyes. Your fathers went down to Egypt with a mere 70 folks. And now Yahuwah has made literally all of you like the stars of heaven for multitude. We're talking several million, probably around 3 million people at this point. And arguably now the descendants of Abraham are, let's just say many, many, many more. Practically uncountable except for Almighty. Chapter 11 says, now therefore, you shall love Yahuwah Eloheka and keep his charge and his statutes and his ordinances and his commandments always. You know, that's another pretty good statement. Pretty good summary. Love him, keep his charge, keep his hukim, his mitzvotim, his mitzvot, rather, and his mishpatim. Always. Ha-amim. Every day. Oh, wait a minute. No, that was just up until the New Testament, right? Wrong. How many different ways does he have to say it? Let God be true and every man a liar, I think, is one pretty reasonable way you'll even see in the apostolic writings that makes that point clear. He was never unclear about the things that he expected. That's why it says, love him, keep his charge, his statutes, judgments, commandments, ordinances always. And know this. I'm not speaking just with you, said Moshe, and your children that you haven't known. And you have not seen the chastisement of Yahuwah, his greatness, his mighty hand, his outstretched arm, his signs, his works, the things that he did in Egypt unto all this land. What he did to the army of Egypt, their horses, their chariots. I made the waters of the Red Sea overflow them after they pursued you. What he did to you in the wilderness till you came to this place. What he did, remember? to Dathan and Abiram, sons of Eliab, sons of Reuben. How the earth opened up, literally swallowed them alive, their households with their tents and everything that they had, right before all Israel. Your eyes, in fact, have seen a whole lot of stuff that Yahuwah did. Many, many that were listening to here, to this litany of things, may not have been among those that actually saw with their own eyes. But they had all kinds of witnesses. You know what? We still have all kinds of witnesses. That's what I think is interesting out of all of this. There are other places in the Torah where we see Moshe say that it's not just you that are standing here before me. It's basically those that will come afterwards too, that are figuratively standing here. These are all things we need to recognize. Even if we look at this and read it and say, well, I didn't see all of this stuff, the witnesses are there. And it's interesting to me, of course, that the more we see about archaeology that hasn't been twisted, the more we see that the witness of Scripture is true. And I do think it's downright fascinating even. There's a number of people that have pointed out just how much is being hidden from the world. How much is in museums that people aren't being allowed to see? Because basically what it makes clear is Scripture was right. And paid for science, not necessarily so much. Because people can be bribed even if Yod Heh Vav Heh can't. Therefore, keep all the commandments which I command you this day, so you can be strong, go in and possess the land. And prolong your days upon the land. The one that, one more time he tells us, Yahuwah swore to your fathers to give them. Yep, it's flowing with milk and honey. From this land that you're going to possess, and it's not like Egypt that you came out of, where you had to sow seed and water it with your foot as a garden of herbs. This land that you're going over to possess is a land of hills and valleys, and it drinks water as the rain of heaven comes down. It is a land that Yahuwah, your Elohim, cares for. His eyes are always upon it from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. And it shall come to pass. Now listen to this. If, keyword if, you shall, what, shamar, hearken diligently unto me, unto my commandments, which I command you to this day. And here it is again, to love Ahav, Yahuwah, your Elohim, to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. Well, then the following will happen. I'll give you your rain, and the land will get the rain in its season. Former rains, latter rains. You can gather your corn, your wine, your oil, grass for your cattle. You will eat and be satisfied. Take heed, though, lest your heart be deceived. How many times in this Torah portion alone do we see this reference? At least three. Don't turn aside to other gods. Don't say, I did this out of the strength of my hand. Understand the source of the blessings. And understand the conditions. Take heed to yourselves, lest your heart be deceived. You turn aside to serve other gods, worship them. And then the anger of Yahuwah is kindled against you, and he shuts up the heavens. So there's no rain. The ground won't yield her fruit, and you in fact perish quickly from off of the good land that he gives you. So therefore, lay up my words in your heart and in your soul. Now listen to this, see if it sounds familiar. We did it just a little while ago. And you shall bind them for a sign upon your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. And you shall teach them to your children, when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down and when you rise up. And you shall write them upon the doorposts of your house and upon your gates, that your days might be multiplied, and that of your children, upon the land that Yahuwah swore to give to your fathers, as the days of the heavens above the earth. For if you diligently keep all this commandment which I command you to do it, to love Yahuwah Eloheka, to walk in all his ways and cleave to him, then Yahuwah will drive out all of these nations before you, and dispossess you will nations greater and mightier than yourselves. Every place your soul treads will be yours. From the wilderness to Lebanon to the river Euphrates. There's two rivers mentioned here. From the Nile to the Euphrates. The river Euphrates. Euphrates is usually the river. And from the hinder sea, all of that will be your border. Don't be any man able to stand against you. Yahuwah, your Elohim, will lay the fear of you and the dread of you upon all the land that you tread upon, just as he has spoken, just as he has promised. Really amazing portion. Interesting. That's where we end at this point. But I want to just close by thinking, okay, oh, there are a number of themes, and those themes get repeated. If you will hearken, shamar, listen, obey, do, then all this good stuff will happen. And the blessings will come upon you, and you'll stand in this land and stay in this land, and it will be a land of milk and honey, and all of this good stuff will happen. And if you fail, well, not so much. Matter of fact, it's worse than that. You'll be out in exile. Out just like the nations that you've dispossessed. And the warnings are repeated and repeated and repeated. Basically, for crying out loud, don't go worshiping the gods of Canaan, the land that you're in. And actually that word doesn't appear in here, but it's the same gods. They got all kinds of different names, all of them adversarial to him. The warnings are about as blunt and clear and repetitive as we're going to see in Scripture. And they haven't changed. And furthermore, he says, as a consequence, understand there's cause and effect. The promises here are conditional. And finally, this theme appears too. Love him with all your soul and with all your might and with all your heart. And teach your children and know that he is who he says he is. He is Echad. All of this stuff will come to pass if you'll walk in blessing. And of course, we know now we didn't. And we haven't. And it wasn't the first time. If you look at the world today, it's not the last. And I guess finally, one more thing in summary, and I will talk about the news in a few minutes, but look at the world and ask yourself the question, if these people that had seen his deliverance, literally, his Yeshua, before their eyes, stand still, see the salvation of Yahuwah, is what Moshe told them right before they went through the Red Sea. He was reminding them of that tonight as well. Well, then, they still needed some chastening. They still had to understand, and I think this is true of all of us, for the same reason that a father chastens his son, they needed to have a little bit of hunger, they needed to have a little bit of thirst, they needed to understand the source of their blessings. We do too. And we're looking at a world today where he not only is not welcome, but utterly denied, right? From the schools to the houses of Congress to the courts, those that claim to make law, and they make law that's antithetical to everything he says. He says don't do it, they say we're going to mandate it. And so forth. Don't even bring such abominations into your house. Love him with all your heart. Serve him, for this is the whole duty of man. For this is our rightful service. For this is something that's never changed. It's not about to change now. But it's, at least as important, arguably, as it ever was. So we'll pause there. And we'll have a bit more music, and we'll talk in a few minutes about some of the things that are going on that help us to know the times and the seasons. All right, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the world. And I'll start it this way. We started the live service this evening. There was a lot of discussion online as well. Several people made comments that certainly echoed what I've been thinking, and that is, yeah, time draws short. But it's not only that. Literally, month after month now, I've been talking about an acceleration and a cusp. A cusp is one of those interesting words. It has to do with when something is poised. If you picture a great big rock balanced on the top of a pointy cone, and all it takes is a little breeze, and it comes knocking down in some direction or other. That's kind of the idea of a cusp. Things are balanced pretty close to the tipping point. And they're going to go one way or another, and once they start downhill, they go rapidly. That's kind of the idea. So I think a lot of us have that understanding. We have that that impression. There's kind of a quickening in our spirits, and if we have any level of understanding of the times and the seasons at all, it's hard to deny that. So as I looked at the news this week and thought, a lot of it's just plain weird. A whole lot of it is let's be honest, not much more but a continuation, an acceleration of things that we've seen already. North Korea is working hard towards being a nuclear power. They fired a submarine-launched ballistic missile. They threatened the U.S. again. More and more strategic sources are coming out and saying, yeah, they're now capable of hitting the United States. They can certainly hit places like South Korea and Japan. And, of course, we got war all over the Mideast. That's accelerating. Turkey sent tanks into Syria. Anywhere you look, the war drums are beating, I guess is one way to put it. Certainly the economic meltdown is continuing apace too. I've said for a long time, when you see the economic meltdown and the stock market can't be propped up anymore, expect that World War III will probably start so close to the same time that people won't know which was the cart and which was the horse. So there's all of that. There is literally the rhetoric coming out of probably, I still look, honestly, folks, I'm not a big fan of Donald Trump, but, and I say this very carefully, but I look at Hillary Clinton. You know I use that terminology and that name because I think it's the only one that fits. She is literally following in the Fourth Reich footsteps. You can look at her economic policies, look at her truthfulness. I guess on that score, it does Adolf a disservice to compare him to her, because at least when he talked about the big lie, he admitted it. Her big lie is just downright satanic, and we saw more and more of that this week. When it comes to doing things that are downright hateful and bigoted, well, she's got a good run for the money with Adolf on that score too. And certainly, let's not forget that within her first probably minutes, she fully intends and has announced that she's going to disarm people. She could care less about your God-given right to keep and bear arms or anything else. I mean, how much more indications do we need of just how far gone a lot of stuff really is? So I want to start. I'll look at the news with this one. And before I get here, I guess what I need to do is begin with a bit of history, because this just came out. I literally saw this news story late in the afternoon on Zero Hedge, and it has to do with Hitler's emails, as if we hadn't heard enough about the treason involved there. And about a company called BleachBit. So I'm going to ask the question. If I say that name, if you've heard about what I'm getting ready to mention, give me a 1. If you don't know what I'm talking about, put a 2 on the screen. So if BleachBit rings a bell, give me a 1. Otherwise, a 2. But before I do the story, I have to do just a bit of history. Because when I saw this, I really thought of something that, you kind of add a little bit of humor. History doesn't repeat, but it rhymes. Some of you may remember Mad Magazine, too. I grew up, I wasn't a big fan of Mad Magazine, but of course kids would bring it to school, and I saw it. I saw one cartoon. Actually, it wasn't a cartoon. It was one of these, Saturday Night Live does the same thing, these ads that are kind of bogus ads. This appeared on the back cover of the magazine, and I still think it is hilarious. And some of you are old enough to remember. Others, I have to introduce the story. You remember the VW Beetle? Little Beetle. Actually, it was the Volkswagen that was designed by guess who in the Third Reich, at least his people. So the VW Beetle was a real big deal, particularly in the 1960s. That's when I remember seeing VW Beetles all over the place. And they had a particularly interesting characteristic, if you've ever seen it. As a matter of fact, I even remember in high school, once upon a time, one of the kids that I knew had a Beetle, and he was going to drive it across this lake outside of Springfield. I don't remember if he ever actually did it or not. But the idea is everybody knew Beetles would float. They would literally float. If one drove in the water, they would float for a long time. And the idea was this kid thought he could actually row his VW across the lake before it would sink. It seemed like kind of a stupid bet. But anyway, the fact that the VW Beetle would float was kind of famous. So back to Mad Magazine. The ad said the following. Now, I got to mention one more thing because some of you may not remember. An infamous fella named Teddy Kennedy. He was a senator for decades and decades. He wanted to be president, like brother, Bobby, who didn't make it, and of course JFK, who was a far better man than his youngest brother ever dreamed of being. Teddy Kennedy got into trouble. He didn't kill a whole lot of people like Hitler seems to have been involved in. You know, compared to the lies that she told, his were relatively tiny whoppers. But one little teeny incident seemed to have cost him the presidency. There was a woman who's not alive anymore. Her name is Mary Jo Kopechne. Anybody remember this? Mary Jo Kopechne was in Teddy Kennedy's car. He drove drunk, probably after a little bit of a tryst, into the Chappaquiddick Creek. And she drowned. And that little teeny incident, back when we were a nation still that had some sense of integrity, cost him the chance to run for president. It was a big scandal in those days. I mean, look at it. Come on, nothing Kennedy did even begins to approach the little stuff that Hitler gets away with on a daily basis. But Mad Magazine immortalized the VW Beetle and Teddy Kennedy with this ad. It was a picture of a VW Beetle floating in a creek, and the caption said the following. If Teddy Kennedy drove a VW, he'd be president today. Again, I thought it was hilarious. Well, back to the story with a long introduction that I wanted to start off with. And the company called BleachBit. And I'm looking at the screen. Let's see. There's been plenty of time. There was one person had heard. Whistler, of course, had heard, and everybody else had not heard about BleachBit. Well, buckle up. You're fixing to. Goes like this. Yesterday, says Tyler Durden, writing for Zero Hedge, we learned that South Carolina Representative Trey Gowdy revealed that Hitler had used a bit of software called BleachBit to wipe her servers clean. Now, I worked on tape drives and disk drives in my engineering career for years and years, and we used to do something that was called Data Security Erase, DSE. And the tape drives had a feature that you could do a DSE on a tape, and it would erase that whole tape. Really, 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 really scrub it clean. And it was a major deal to do that. And they used this for top secret corporate information. You know, the kind of thing you would never send on Hitler's email servers because, well, if you cared about the data, you didn't want Russians and Chinese and North Koreans and everybody else having it. I guess she didn't care so much about everybody having the data to begin with, but she didn't want it to be found later. So she went and got BleachBit. Is like a data security erase, and it wiped her servers clean. So Trey Gowdy was on Fox News, and he suggested that the fact that she used BleachBit undermines her lies that she deleted only innocuous personal emails from her illegal, treasonous private server. Specifically, said Gowdy, quote, if she considered them to be personal, then she and her lawyers had those emails deleted. They didn't just push the delete button. They had them deleted where even God can't read them. Unquote. Now, I'll say this again, right? NSA has them, you know that, but NSA has an agenda too, and they could care less about the rule of law, otherwise they wouldn't even exist. So the stinkiness here goes to high heaven, and kind of makes me wish we had honest murderers like Teddy Kennedy, who just got drunk and killed people, as opposed to ordering them in advance. So Gowdy points out that then instead they used BleachBit. You don't use BleachBit, he said, for your yoga emails. You have to really, really be serious to have something like this that you want to scrub the data clean. Now, you're ready for the funny part? Now you see why I spent the time talking about the Mad Magazine tongue-in-cheek ad. What I'm fixing to tell you is not a Mad Magazine spoof or a Saturday Night Live joke. This is real, folks. Of course, it's no joke anymore either when we have evil incarnate wanting to have the imperial pen in her hand. The BleachBit team has used the whole controversy as a marketing tool. They now have a website note on their BleachBit.com site that says, quote, BleachBit stifles investigation of Hillary Clinton. They even pick fun at her gaffe when reporters asked if she wiped her servers clean on purpose, and she said, well, she'd wiped them clean kind of like with a cloth or something, unquote, pointing out that, as BleachBit now says proudly on their website, it turns out that BleachBit was the cloth. Ha ha ha. BleachBit also points out they've not been served with warrants because, of course, Once they clean it, it's clean. Like Trey Gowdy said, even God himself. Well, they don't think that God exists, so they don't mention that. But anyway, the cleaning process is not reversible. Nope. The whole ad is all about how good it is. You really want to make sure that you don't get indicted. You don't get indicted for treason or murder. You don't have to go to jail. Use Bleach Bit. And guess what? Would you believe that Bleach Bit has now said that they're receiving overwhelming interest? Folks looking to permanently erase their innocuous yoga schedules and emails from bridesmaids, yes, and or similar incriminating information. When the story broke this morning, traffic to the Bleach Bit website and download servers spiked, and they had trouble for a while handling the loads. It's, well, in a way it's funny, in a way, folks, it's tragic. We've moved from a place where Teddy Kennedy innocently, you know, does something with a woman that's not his wife and then gets her killed because he's a drunken SOB. But hey, at least he's a drunken, honest SOB. He lied about it. He let her die. Yeah, I wish we had people of the integrity of that running in the Democrats who merely killed one person. It's, what can I say about this? It's frustrating. Look where we are. Look at how far things have gone to the point where we have people running for office that don't deserve to be in prison wearing orange. The truth of the matter is Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were executed for crimes that make Hitlery look reasonably tame by comparison. And poor Teddy Kennedy didn't even get to be president because of one little old murder. He should have talked to Vince Foster. This is where we are. We're coming up on October the 1st, really soon. And, of course, October the 1st is when the other man who is currently thinking of himself as king has agreed to turn over control of the Internet to an international UN-type body that can do the things that, Facebook is trying to do, and that is shut down the web. And, of course, there's others that are trying to help as well. So we'll see whether or not the Internet literally expires officially on October 1st. But meanwhile, we've got Hillary Clinton that has come right out and said she wants to destroy Breitbart News because, they don't toe the party line. She owns the rest of them, but not Breitbart. There was a big deal this week. She literally named Alex Jones, I guess, by name, and she wants him gone too. She named the so-called alt-right. That's all of us that would call ourselves liberty-oriented or constitutional-oriented or Bible-oriented or basically just not criminally subservient-oriented. And we think that when somebody puts the hand on the Bible, they ought to be at least serious about trying not to be a treasonous criminal. Well, we're alt-right. She intends to shut that down, too, and to demonize such people as bigots and who knows what else, but we actually do know what else. Facebook has gone Orwellian. I alluded to this, same kind of topic. They are now blocking, says Mike Adams at Natural News, any and all stories that even mention certain keywords. The latest, mandatory vaccinations. So they actually did this. They've got the test. They've got the stuff up on the web. If you put the word mandatory vaccinations and try and link a story on Facebook that contains that word, Facebook will reject it. It won't get linked. Interesting. And don't say there's no free speech in America anymore. We've still got a few weeks until October. All right. Well, that's all I wanted to put in to make sure that we got of the news for the podcast. The rest has already been covered pretty well during the week, but I guess we can summarize it the same way. This is not America, folks, at least not America with a C and with a rule of law. And the same thing is happening around the world. Once upon a time, Americans thought they had the protections of the Bill of Rights. Canadians really never did. Brits had the Magna Carta, but not much else. And in much of the rest of the world, it's already worse. So what we're seeing is a literal, not just collapse of the rule of law, but I will contend it's an absolute replacement, calling evil good and good evil. So we know the times and the seasons, and it is really, really important that we lift one another up in prayer and make, for crying out loud, sure that we know who we serve. This week's Torah portion is about as good of an example of that as we see. Don't bring the abominations into your house. If you forget him, bad stuff will happen. And I'd say, look at the world and realize he was right again.